Time now for the Board of News Roundup with Marshall Helmberger. Marshall's the editor of the Timber Jay, a weekly newspaper serving communities in northern St. Louis County. Welcome back, Marshall.
Thanks, Scott. Glad to be here.
Well, Marshall, our lead story is that the Department of Commerce and Frontier Communications came with a stipulation agreement. Now, it's been almost 2 years since the Timber Jay had their investigation of some of the grievances people had over Frontier's services. What's the new stipulation agreement like?
Well, it's fairly detailed. It's about a 35-page agreement. One of the things that I was looking for right away was whether or not there would be any kind of a fine issued against the company, because certainly state law does allow for a fine as a deterrent to corporations when they don't live up to the agreements that they've made with the state when it comes to providing service. You know, these are regulated utilities, telecommunications, so they're required to meet certain standards. And as the Department of Commerce documented in a very detailed study, which they released in January of this year, they documented widespread violations. In fact, they suggested there were at least 35 different violations of state law or rules that had been committed by Frontier. And they had left many people without service for weeks on occasion. They also received a tremendous amount of input from customers. In fact, they received more than 1,000 public comments as part of their investigation, which is really a big number for this kind of a thing. I mean, normally they're lucky if they get a dozen comments. So when they got 1,000, they realized that there's a lot of unhappiness out there. And, you know, I think in the overall scheme of things, just looking through the agreement, you know, they're certainly requiring Frontier to do a number of things to try to improve the speed of their service when people have issues. They also are requiring the company to make outreach to all of its customers, letting them know that they would qualify potentially for refunds for certain things. If they were overbilled for services or, you know, for services that they never received, you know, the problem there, of course, being that it will be up to customers to document those things. Presumably, they probably could have made those requests before had they had sufficient documentation. So it remains to be seen whether that's a huge improvement or not. They've also committed, Frontier's committed to make a good faith effort to improve compliance with applicable Minnesota rules and laws. I think in the initial report, as I mentioned, I think figured they were in violation of about 35 different rules and laws in Minnesota. Obviously, there was an issue there. They also have to provide training to current and future Frontier employees to help them basically provide better customer service. They're requiring that they provide credits or refunds, either $5 or $10 a day, for every day that they're not able to bring service back to somebody when they lose service. It'd be $5 a day for a residential customer or $10 a day for a business. I would think, you know, for a business, if you're without your service for a day, it's going to cost you a lot more than $10. So I suspect there are going to be some folks who aren't particularly excited about that.
How about the fine? Was there a fine?
There is no fine at all. No. That was kind of the biggest surprise here. Now, I should mention that the Public Utilities Commission will have to approve this agreement yet, and they certainly could issue a fine if they were to choose to do that. My guess is that it probably won't happen. And I should mention the administrative law judge in this case took the unusual step of actually recommending approval of the stipulation agreement. And the judge in this case served as the mediator for this agreement. Both the Department of Commerce and Frontier had spent about 5 months in mediation to try to develop this agreement. And it's interesting, too, because the judge in this case actually used to be an attorney for one of the telecom company that actually had a wholesale relationship with Frontier. I know. It's a little bit troubling to see that people with that kind of background are the ones who are developing or helping to develop these agreements. It certainly does seem as though I think Frontier has to probably feels they got off pretty easily here.
Will customers be able to notice or monitor the improvement in their service? And if they,
well,
how do they respond?
Really, it's really hard to know. You know, ultimately, they're going to have to improve the quality of the infrastructure. And that's one of the things that, you know, I'd also look to see whether or not there were, you know, investment requirements here. I mean, because one of the things that the Department of Commerce had discussed in their report was the fact that in many areas of the state, the infrastructure in place by Frontier was woefully inadequate, deteriorated. And so when you have a situation like that, you just tend to have more issues with service. So, you know, unless you're going to require the company to make a certain level of investment, my guess is it's just going to be more of the same.
And consumers don't have another choice, do they, in a communications provider?
Well, they do to some extent. And in fact, you know, this is something that's been happening, and I think this may be why Frontier is a little bit reluctant to make significant investments in their landline infrastructure, and that's because people have been moving away from landlines and just going with cell service in many cases. And, you know, as Frontier's service quality deteriorates, you're seeing more and more of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I assume you're in that service area. Are you inclined to abandon Frontier yourself?
Well, right now they're our primary source for internet at home, at least when it's working.
Mm-hmm.
We've had an 11-day period here where we didn't have phone or internet service from Frontier.
So can you get a refund, you think, for that 11-day period?
Well, we probably could if we wanted to, you know, go through the trouble of documenting it.
Oh, I see.
And then spending, you know, how long on the phone to, you know, try to get it in process. And that's going to be the issue here. Is, you know, if you put all the burden on the customer, in most cases, the company probably won't be held liable.
I see. Okay, well, let's move on because you've been reporting over the last, almost a year now about Lampa Manufacturing, the great potential they have for becoming a really important business for the Lake Vermilion area, including Tower, with their wood stoves and things. And what's the update there?
Well, the good news is they are hoping to actually move in here within the next 10 days. Things have finally cleared out in terms of some of the issues that were preventing them from moving in there. And with any luck, they should be in possibly as early as beginning of next week. Then the company can start focusing on getting caught up on orders. They definitely need the additional space. They have been having a very good year. The biggest problem they've been having is just trying to keep up in the facility that they've been operating in for many years. The demand for both their sauna stoves as well as their wood furnaces has really increased, you know, and since they were certified by the EPA as meeting the a very strict standard that doesn't go into effect until next year, but they've already met that standard. In fact, they didn't just meet it, they beat it by 40%. The testing lab couldn't believe what they were seeing. They thought there was some kind of a mistake with the way they were doing it because their filters, when they would pull them out, were so clean. So they have a remarkable product. It's very efficient as well as very clean burning. They could be employing hundreds. I mean, I've been saying for a while, I think this company could be the next Marvin Windows. You know, I mean, they could be that big.
Wow.
So it's just a question of having the space to expand. And the biggest challenge they're probably going to face right now is just finding available workforce.
Uh-huh.
That is the number one impediment to just about all business expansion right now up here.
Yeah. Well, let's hope they do. And you told us you were interested in attending the Festival of Scalds last week in Angora. And I just wondered, did you get there?
We certainly did. Yeah, on Saturday afternoon, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, we talked originally, we'll go there, take a few pictures, and, you know, buzz out in about 45 minutes or so. And we were there for over 2 hours, you know, because there was just a lot to see there. I mean, it was relatively small, but there were probably, you know, a couple dozen different booths set up, and just really interesting people there. It was a Nordic theme, but it was not everybody was 100% consistent with the theme. So it was fairly eclectic in terms of the mix of things. But, you know, there were some Viking reenactors engaging in sword fights. You know, you could learn to shoot a primitive bow. There was axe throwing, things like that. And then just a lot of other entertainment. And, of course, I wanted to go see the dragon hunting safety course, which is, as you might imagine, tongue-in-cheek, mostly just meant to be funny. And it was, actually. The fellow who put it on was quite entertaining. He had a good sense of humor. And you could, if you wanted to spring for $15, you could actually have gotten your official dragon hunting license, which is a lifetime license.
Wow.
But in the end, I thought, I don't need to spend $15. But a lot of people did, and, it was a lot of fun, I have to say. And this was the first year that it was done publicly, and I guess they'd had a couple of trial runs with friends and family the previous 2 years. It was very well received, though. There was a steady stream of people coming through to check it out. And it's just a really beautiful location, you know. It's just an old farmstead out in Angora, mostly wooded. There was just an old field where people parked, and you just kind of walked through the woods. And they kind of had, it cleared out in little paths, and you'd wander through the woods, and there'd be something else to look at and people to talk to. And so all in all, it was very fun.
Yeah, sounds great.
And they'll be doing it next year, and they hope to make it, bigger, just kind of expand every year, have more and more stuff there.
Wonderful. Hey, DNR announced deer permits for this fall's hunting season, and you checked out the deer permit numbers for parts of northeastern Minnesota. What does it look like?
Well, looks like there's going to be some competition for the doe tags this year. The numbers are down. Actually, most of the permit areas in basically Coochachin County, northern Itasca, northern St. Louis, northern Lake, there'll be lottery, so you'll have to apply for an antlerless tag. And they're not giving out many permits of the antlerless permits. I think in 108, which is a big chunk of territory, and mostly in northern St. Louis and Coochachin counties, 100 doe tags. A couple of the other ones kind of in more central St. Louis County, they're giving out 300 permits. But, I mean, there's a lot of demand typically for, doe tags in those areas, because there's a lot of folks who hunt in those permit areas. And so, most people are probably going to be stuck with bucks only this year. The only exception is permit area 177, which is kind of runs from some of the ag country around Cook over to Lake Vermilion. And that's going to be hunter's choice this year, which means with a deer license, you can take either a buck or a doe.
Yeah. My first thought was last winter was kind of long and probably pretty hard in some areas. Maybe that's why there was a decline in population?
Yes, that's my assumption. I actually have a meeting with the DNR area wildlife manager next week, and this will certainly be something we'll be talking about.
So. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll be following that closer as the deer hunting season arrives. You know, it's just a couple of weeks before the bear season opens. So we're going to be talking hunting a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And the deer archery season opens in mid-September. So, I mean, hunting season is right around the corner.
Yeah.
Winter's coming. That's what that means, right?
We don't have to talk too much about that right now. But fall is certainly a precious time.
It is, yeah. No doubt.
Hey, you guys have a great weekend.
All right, you too.
Thanks a lot, Marshall.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Marshall Hellenberger, he edits the Timber Jay, and we visit with him Friday mornings on the Border News Roundup.